For July the 8th, 2016, we talk about the CSGO gambling controversy, Zero Time Dilemma, and we ask you about patriotic games. Welcome to Level 157. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Myersmith.
And I'm Jala Prendes.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. It's one of those weird cases where it's the day after 4th of July. Some call it the 5th as we're recording this.
One of those weird cases that happens once a year.
I know, right? and we don't know when it's going to happen again. so like I want to remark on that and make the opening shtick about it, but no, that doesn't work because this comes out on Friday.
Cole, we have a middle shtick about it.
What?
Our multiplayer.
Oh yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Exactly. That's true.
Fine. Also, I believe the technical term is a Mexit.
What?
Oh, yeah, it's America.
Ugh.
Oh gosh.
Saw a bunch of images with different countries and their version of that.
Huh. Thank God the Revolutionary War didn't have hashtags.
Jala, thank you for coming.
Yeah, I know. This is unprecedented. This combination doesn't happen very often. I think it's happened like once?
I think so.
Before?
We're going to have to get Ben to spreadsheet that.
Yeah, we got to have a spreadsheet. Somebody tell me how many times this has happened.
Yeah, what's the
distribution? You could even do like association rules, like based on who's on the podcast, what is the chances of other people being on the podcast?
I think that's a problem though, because like you would have to exclude me from that because selfishly, it's a very solipsistic thing, but the show doesn't happen if I'm not here.
True.
Yeah.
Except that one time that it did bonus level 15.
There we go.
Until we replace Cole with Slackbot.
it's high noon. Oh man. So thank you for stepping in. I forget what Ben had to go do, but he wasn't able to be here.
He went away to places. And, you know, the only reason why I found out before today that I was supposed to be on the podcast is because listeners who talked to me told me about this.
Oh.
Specifically, Mr. Deluxe. Thank you, Mr. Deluxe.
Oops. Yeah, I think I remember that coming up. And then I was like, oh, we need to ask Jala. And then I completely forgot.
Well, a listener was like, oh, well, you know, I guess this is good. You're going to be on the podcast next week. And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? Because I hadn't listened to The Level yet. Yeah. And I was going to, and I did later. But, you know.
Yeah. So. Well, all's well that ends. Well.
I totally ran
all's
over
well
you.
That ends with Jala.
Yeah, I guess. David, I ran over you.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, this is the once a year Ben has to go to, you know, a small island in the South Pacific and, you know, perform a ritual in order to, you know, stave off the end of the world. It was this whole prophecy thing,
he has to stave off the bend.
Yes.
Yeah. The bend of the world.
The actuary of doom.
Yeah,
I would have face palm, but I have my mic right in front of my face, and that would have just made a really loud noise.
And which one? I'm not sure. That was a rapid fire face palm. The bend of the world. Yeah.
So many face palmable things.
Oh
yes.
Da-da-da-da-da. Yeah. Oh. So, anybody got anything going on? What? Let's banter.
I registered for a marathon and a half marathon and a 25K and a 30K. And the Wellness Chat Slack channel created a team for the marathon challenge. But Dennis sucks, and he went to go do it with other people because he doesn't like us. And so we're just going to have to beat him. We're just going to beat him.
I pulled a sports movie villain move.
Mm. Yeah, totally. So we're just going to beat him, and that's the end of that. But anyway, it's the marathon challenge is 3,521 miles, and it is like basically the distance to go across the U.S. And you can run it solo or in a team. And if you run it as a team, then you can split up the miles among all the different people who are in the team, and they send you pieces of the medal as you finish it. And you also get flyover videos and things like that that show you what the path would be if you were literally running across the U.S. and everything. Mm. And you can run, walk, jog, hike, bike, swim, as long as it's like you doing it, not like your car, you know?
Oh, dang it. I was going to say, because I'm about to drive most of the way
across the U.S. You racked up all the miles, David. Yeah.
David, have you considered rickshaw?
You know, that could be.
My buddy Rick Shaw, he has a cross-country trucking concern.
Yeah, and the face palms continue.
You know what?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Face palm trees.
Go ahead, David. I'm sorry. We have a little bit of overtalk. I apologize.
No problem. I'm not sure if I've actually mentioned I guess my announcement would be in about 2 weeks, I'm going to be taking a class in San Francisco, which I think I might have mentioned before, but more relevant to this podcast, that means I'm not going to be on the podcast for at least 3 months.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
So I'm taking a hiatus.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll be here when you get back.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Being deposed by Jala.
I'm just keeping your spot warm. You'll come back and get it. It's fine.
See, that's what they all say. And then you come back and things, all of a sudden things start going Macbeth style.
We change the locks on Skype.
Yep.
The password, I think, might be a better.
No, I'm pretty sure it works with locks.
Yep. Yeah. That's what the icon.
Yeah, you lock the pipes and tubes closed.
Yeah.
No, well, it's kind of what we'll get into it, but I just bought a game to play co-op with David. Mm-hmm. So you'll be gaming, maybe not during the class, but just won't be on the show. But I will regale with tales of our exploits, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yay!
Sure. But everybody reach out to David and wish him the best, because it's a big deal. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do you feel about it?
I'm pretty pumped. Sorry about that. I should.
You're already real busy. You got the big deal San Francisco cell phone.
Yes, because that is a thing.
Yep.
The San Francisco cell phone sounds like a sex move.
Mm. Involves a fog machine.
No, this is Silicon Valley. No one has sex.
Nobody tell him. Cool.
I'm pretty pumped for it. I don't know. Right now, I'm kind of just ready to get going.
Yeah. No use being stuck in limbo.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's such a good segue. Come on.
I suppose.
Did you pick that up?
So does Limbo count for Hexcrank? Is that a survival horror game?
I forget if I actually put that on the list. I made that list like 3 years ago, and then it's
definitely a horror game.
Like, for the first third of it is. Like, it's a scary game in general, but I think that the part... Yep, it's on there. I put it on there 3 years ago, so it must still be...
It still counts.
Yep. God damn it. Yeah. No, I'm not going to pick that up. I killed a lizard.
I saw that.
I read about that.
Yeah, I was bummed out. See, I like these lizards. People who are not familiar with Cincinnati and David and Dennis, you're the one. Yeah, David and Dennis, you can corroborate. We have all these like little lizards around here, and I talk about them. I tweet about them and stuff. They're real cute. They're like an invasive species from Southern Europe. It was like late last week. I think it was like Friday. I walked out and I looked on the floor, and oh, that's weird. I have a lizard toy, and the fact that the fact that I went to a toy first says more about the way that I live my life than it does.
The fact that you don't own a lizard toy didn't bother you?
No, I own a lizard toy. What kind of monster do you think I am? I don't have a lizard toy. And I was like, that's weird. Like, that's that should be like in a drawer with all of my like, you know, kid stuff or whatever. And then it ran away and it went up into the workings of my couch. And then the fact that I didn't leave the house for 3 days, shame on me, right, meant that he had worked his way down downstairs to the front door and tried to get out, because apparently he followed me in, and he couldn't because I at no point that I opened the door. So he died and dried out, waiting right by the front door, and it was real sad. So I'm sorry, Lizard. I found you on the 4th of July.
Oh, man. He failed to get his independence.
Yep. Wow, I threw him into the front yard with a pair of grill tongs. Yeah. So, yeah, that's my...
What were your final words? Well, like, there had to be some kind of lizard eulogy.
Get out of here!
Well, you could borrow my lizard, but he has a cage and food and stuff in it, so he'll be okay. You can borrow him.
Yeah, I mean...
Indra's very cute, and he doesn't bite or anything.
I agree. Adorable. I've seen pictures of this lizard. It is a very good lizard. I fear for what I would do to this lizard if I had it custody, so...
See, I said I didn't say how long. Okay.
I was impressed by the degree to which our viewers had your back.
Yeah.
Well, you weren't more than one or two tweets in before they decided that ownership of the house defaulted to the lizard and you had to pack up.
Yeah, they started talking about him like he was my landlord, and they were not wrong. Like, for a good 2 hours, he dictated my every movement as I tried to... I mean, the grill tongs entered the equation really early in this, because I've had to... Trust me, I've had to tong a lizard before, you know?
Now, do you know... Have you seen your landlord since? Do you know it wasn't some kind of brother bear scenario where he was changed into a lizard to learn a lesson?
I mean, he's dead as fuck, so lesson achieved. Maybe he was supposed to teach somebody
else.
The
landlord?
No. The lizard was my landlord.
Yeah.
Oh, what?
I'm asking, have you seen your landlord since the lizard died? But I guess...
he was here mowing the grass earlier today.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's significantly less fun.
Yeah, I know. Less fun than my nice landlord dying.
Well, as a lizard, that's a pretty good way to go out,
I suppose. That way, nobody has to. There's no shame in that. Oh man,
it will always be a cold-blooded death.
Mm, yes, a cold. Did you say a cold-blooded
death? Oh God.
No, I didn't, but I should have. We're
gonna break Jala.
That's
face
palm.
There we go. We need to move on unless you have anything.
My eye
Dennis.
Is watering, and I'm not kidding you. You're making my eye leak. Oh,
that's sad. How about you, Dennis? We've all taken a turn.
Sure, I can go real quick. Things are good. I started my new job and very excited about that.
Cool.
I don't know that there's much more to say about it. It's very nice people and a very nice place, and I'm excited to be there.
Awesome. You have a little write-up, and you mentioned a podcast. You didn't use that as an op. What kind of a... I'm trying to figure out what kind of marketer you are that you didn't slide the name of the podcast
in. I didn't go full bore. Really, I'm reaching for those hardcore Dennis fans who will find it on their own. It'll be that much more sweeter for them.
You're doing a hex crank. I get it. Cool. Well, yeah, that's exciting stuff. Marathons.
So now I am the only hippie.
Well, you're still bettering yourself.
True.
So yeah, banter achieved. Let us go on. We've got the usual show for you: the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And we're going to start with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Let's see here.
Pick me.
Yes,
pick me.
Jala. We have a couple of timely ones here. I was trying to choose Jala.
Okay, so listeners may remember that I interviewed the guys at Lostwood Games about Leviathan, the last day of the decade, with my buddy John. That was the non-Cole episode I mentioned. And that was bonus level 15 back in December, I think December?
Yep.
No, or was it the end of November? Anyway, something like that. Well, the sequel that they mentioned during that podcast is dropping in English, and the first chapter will be out as of the time you are listening to this episode, and that's Thursday. So Thursday, July 7th. Mm-hmm. So I was part of the team this time. I was working on localization and editing work on the script. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you that the writing continues to be awesome, and I highly encourage you supporting them and picking it up.
Yeah.
And so yeah, that's a thing. And it's cool, and it's going to be on Steam, and I don't know if it's going to drop immediately to Android and iOS, but it will eventually make its way there if it won't be there right away.
This is, what, the third game you've worked on?
Something like that?
Yeah. I'm kind of like to Ash and then the translation work on the first one of these.
Yeah, yeah. So, And this one is called...
I have to start calling you an insider.
Well, sort of, kind of. But this one is called Leviathan the Cargo, and it continues the story from the first game, basically with a whole slew of new characters that are escorting the cargo that you would understand about if you played the first game. Mm-hmm. What's in the box? What's in the box? You would know.
It's Gwyneth Paltrow's head.
Put the bunny in the box. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Well, anyway... you know, they get to take that through the Plague King's Tower. So it's going to be cool.
Yeah. And this isn't like just self-promotion because you work out. Like, this is a game you really like.
No,
like
no.
A series
oh, no,
and something
no,
like
no,
really,
no,
you really
like,
believe in. I just want to make sure people understand that.
Yeah. Like, I was interested in this game, and actually it's because I was very jazzed about it and I wanted to ask about when the rest of the episodes were going to drop. I'd message them about it. Just before we had recorded one time, sometime in last fall, I think. And then they were just like, yeah, here, you want some free copies to give away on your podcast and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And then they were like, hey, you know, totally, you know, we'll pop up and do an interview. And so, like, you know, they're just super friendly, super interested in engaging the audience and stuff. And so they just kind of like sucked me in and I just kind of like merged. So, no, I was interested in this game before and I played the first game like 8 times through and I still didn't see everything. When I was working on the cleanup of the script for the first game, I was still coming across stuff in that script that I had never come across in the game when I played it 8 times through.
Wow.
So, I mean, there's a lot in there. It is cool. So.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Congratulations to you and team. So Steam, like, do you know if it's Windows only or if it's
yeah, it looks like it is Windows only.
Mm.
So
the first one is it's crossplay, like it has it's for the major ones.
Yeah.
So cool. So that probably means it's going to be coming along shortly. Well, yeah, that's awesome. Like that's a huge deal that you finish up a big project like that.
Yep.
Yeah. Great. With another timely one, David, what's yours?
Sure. So mine is actually reporting on a speedrun that's being done for Summer Games Done Quick.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe the run itself was actually done earlier today. I missed the run itself, but it's apparently going, by the time people hear this, it will be on their YouTube page.
Mm-hmm.
But a runner named Rom Scout has in the past beat Castlevania Symphony of the Night in under 54 minutes with the caveat that he did it while blindfolded.
his sighted run is 17 minutes.
Right, exactly. And
wow.
He's now going to try again. Thanks to this, I guess I'm not real familiar with this, but I guess kind of their equivalent of stretch goals. Mm-hmm. One of them was for $15,000. Yes, I read that number right. Yay! was actually what you know, kind of unlocked him doing this run. Apparently, there's a last minute kind of contribution by a company named the Yeti.
Yeah, the Yeti, they run the they're a t-shirt vendor. They do like limited run, limited time game related shirts. They do all of the official like merchandise for SGDQ and AGDQ. I have a couple of shirts from them. I would never wear them, but like, when are you gonna get a shirt that has like the Runaway 5 from Earthbound on it?
Sorry.
That's right.
Yeah. And all the money goes to Doctors Without Borders, which is a really cool group. So
yeah.
It's, I don't know, like, obviously this is cool because it's, you know, charity and that's cool. And also, like, it's kind of a crazy thing. I watched, some of his, 54 minute run and it seemed like a lot of it was just kind of like weird, like him using the different moves you can do to like measure off,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of quirky.
Describe measuring off.
Like it was things where like it was very obvious like he'd you know like purposely run into a wall and then say like use the back dash twice because he knew that was the distance that then if he jumped, he would, you know, like, land on a platform.
Oh, yeah. So just kind of like little quick tricks to be like pixel perfect for weird stuff.
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly. And also like, you know, some like more conventional speedrun thing, like there's, I'm not entirely sure if it was explicitly a glitch or just kind of the way things lined up, but there's like one point where basically unequipped all his armor and then like purposely got hit by an enemy, which proceeded to like throw him across like several screens past all the enemies, you know, yeah, things like that. That's just just kind of fun to watch.
That's a trick I know of. That's a it's fun to watch the arms race of exploits like that as they're kind of picked up. Yeah, SGDQ, like that's a crazy long. I guess I never realized how long these go. Like it started the previous weekend as people listen to this, and it goes like for the entire weekend coming up.
Right. Like, and my understanding is it's kind of all over the place. There's, you know, more conventional speedruns, you know, kind of like some of the Dark Souls things, but then there's also a lot of these like stunt runs, right?
Yeah, you get people who run really weird shit. You know, like usually at least in AGDQ, they've got like, oh, we're just gonna have people play like weird bastard PSX games. Like here's a speed run of Bust a Groove or something like that. Yeah.
Which is nice, like that there is a way for those games to kind of have their one last hurrah out in the limelight for a little bit. Yeah.
Having people
like,
there's
no way anyone else is going to play those games except for a crazy stunt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's cool. I felt bad when I've been streaming this past week. Like I don't want to stop streaming, but I also don't want to counter program against that stuff. But yeah. Game's done quick. It's really good. I'm not sure what their interface is for going to find this old stuff, and I need to close this window that you linked us to because there's a Super Meat Boy speedrun happening and it's hypnotizing.
Cancel the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. That is SGDQ and a crazy ass thing. Let's see here. Dennis, what you got?
Yeah, so this one is about a game we've talked about a couple times, Atlas Reactor. Much to my chagrin, I haven't been able to play it because I owned, past tense, a Mac, and had the realization last night that, oh my God, now that I own a PC, I can play Atlas Reactor. So I got into the closed beta before I realized it was PC only, which I should have seen that one coming.
Oh, yeah.
And then repressed it because it was horrible to think about not being able to play it. So it has now come back up. And everyone will get a chance to play it starting July 8th. So we are 3 for 3 now on very timely stories because the free open event will start the same day this podcast comes out to the general public. So July 8th to the 17th, everyone can go in and try Atlas Reactor, whether or not you've been a part of the beta. For anyone who hasn't heard that name before, shame on you. but if you've played Frozen Synapse, then you know what Atlas Reactor is like. So it's turn-based, team-based combat where the turns play out simultaneously. So not only do you have to kind of factor in where people are when you plan your next turn, but you have to factor in where you think they will go. Yeah. So I'm excited about this. I can't wait to get my hands on the game. July 8th through 17th, everyone will be able to do the same. So get on that. Hopefully I will see you in there.
Yeah, I still think this is a trap, Dennis. I really think that somebody has designed something specifically to like put you into a mind prison.
Oh my God, yeah. Once I actually get into this game, I'll never come out. So
what's a shame.
I know that full well, and I'm still going to open up this game.
Yeah, don't say nobody warned you. Cool. Yeah. And then I'll do mine. This is also kind of timely in that it happened recently. All right, so do you guys know what goes on with like Valve and like betting with items in like Counter-Strike Go and Team Fortress and stuff, like the weird like shadow economies that have cropped up?
Only in the Vegas terms. So
yeah.
I choose not to know because I believe that what I imagine is probably more entertaining.
I mean, if what you imagine is a bunch of people yelling at their screen as what essentially is a slot machine happens in front of them, then yes, you are spot on.
No, there's many more death matches on like exotic privately owned islands.
Oh, like actual death matches, not like Counter-Strike stuff.
Right. No, like Van Damme, you know, any movie he made.
Yeah, somebody's gonna get killed with a shovel. Yeah, it's just gonna happen.
No,
yeah.
With a loot crate key.
Yeah. So this is crazy. I had no idea how much it was kind of crooked, I suppose. Like, you know, anytime where there's a system that can be exploited, it's going to be exploited. It's weird that Valve lets it happen. Valve is currently facing a class action suit because you only have to be 13 to play CSGO, and you can get an item in the game and then gamble it, and you get skins that you can then sell for money. So that's weird enough anyway. Like some of these skins, they range from like, oh, you sell them for 4 cents up to like $4,000, mm-hmm. stuff like that. Just for like, hey, this is a slightly different shade of camouflage for this gun. Somebody's going to buy it. And I'm pretty sure it all links back to drug money, but that is as of yet proven. One of the big guys who was huge in the scene for Team Fortress hat trading kind of stuff, he moved on after that and started getting into making YouTube videos with another dude. These two dudes are T. Martin and Syndicate. And they started making videos of like, hey, we got a sponsorship from this place called CS Lotto or CSGO Lotto. And, you know, just making some entertaining content of me opening this up or doing this gambling and releasing videos titled like how to win $13,000 in 20 minutes or something like that.
Oh, God.
And so it's, you know, them pressing these buttons and then shouting at the screen as they get this, and oh my god. The problem is, and what has come to light by people saying, hey, that's kind of weird that they're like sponsored by this thing, well, actually they own the site that they have been promoting by making it look like it was easier to win than it did, and then marketing it on YouTube where it almost certainly would be hitting mostly people who are under 21. Yeah.
Facepalms continue.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so you look at videos of these guys, and it is dire what they're doing. Like, when you know the truth of it, they're like, yeah, I heard about this little site. Like, no disclosure that they had any interest in it whatsoever. You know, that is a big deal because, like, the FTC is concerned about people not representing their sponsorships. You know, if there's anything there, and especially if people aren't representing their stake in it, making content, which I'm not sure why anybody would watch. But then again, I'm not sure why anybody would do this. And I look at this, and all I can think of is, I feel so old. I don't get it. There's so many moving parts in this that I have, like, just like, it's not my world. The YouTube side of it, the CSGO side of it, the weird gambling economies, like, none of this is for me. I'm like, I just, it's kind of like you like wander into like a part of the office you never go to, and people are just kind of like breaking light bulbs over each other. It's like, what the fuck are you guys doing here? I look away for like a second,
where,
and this is what people have
you working?
I don't know. A light bulb destruction office. Yeah. So I don't know like what discussion I want to start off with this, but like, you know, people are outraged. And even if you temper this and, you know, take it back to what it is and look at their responses, which is very much like, I'm so sorry if you think that there is some kind of impropriety happening here, all the way to making posts, deleting them, setting all their videos to private, putting in changing their story. Like, all of this looks as just skeevy as fuck. Am I wrong? Is everybody else wrong? Is there a side to this that nobody is seeing?
Well, it's people who believed they were so far in some random corner of the internet that they were untouchable.
Yeah.
And they're panicking and scrambling now because the real world has come knocking.
Well, isn't gambling illegal in most of the U.S.? Maybe these guys aren't in the U.S. I don't know.
They have accents, but I'm not sure where exactly they're at. It's international gambling is a thing that is frowned upon, and that is regulated in a different way compared to this. That's part of what the class action suit against Valve is about, is like, oh, this is...
I'm not sure how Valve's to blame, though, exactly.
Not for this. These are two separate things. The suit against Valve is saying this is a game of chance where there's, you know, you are buying stuff. Let me rephrase that. They've created a platform where it's possible to win things that are worth a lot of money. They say that no real money is involved in this. It is just presented as a game of chance to bring some excitement to the actual game, but then, like, there's a button in the interface that says, hey, sell this for money. And the fact that these things are worth money and you have these kind of like added things that you can access basically from within the interface in order to kind of gamble with your winnings from the opens. There is a plausible interpretation that Valve is responsible somewhat for this.
It's tickling all the same neurons.
I'm not sure I buy that.
Yeah, I mean, just like we can talk about whether or not that particular part of it's gambling, but like these guys, that's bad.
Oh yeah. I mean that. Well, at the very least, I mean it's a con job. The con men at the very least.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. I don't know.
So what is this? Where does a person like this go? Like, okay, you had your sweet little 13-year-old gambling ring set up. You get blown up. Like, do we think there's any chance these people land with jail time?
I don't know. They broke. I mean, does anybody get jail time for breaking the FTC rules? You know, and especially like if they're not in the U.S., are they actually under it? And like their credibility is ruined, but all they have to do is go and, you know, run to ground.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's the internet. Credibility is never ruined enough to get someone to go away.
I know, like I can understand some of the some of the upsetness from the with this kind of being targeted towards, you know, people that, you know, were young, but for people that were adults that fell for this, I kind of feel like there needs to be maybe a little bit of, you know, taking responsibility.
Yeah, and that gets into a question of like, hey, does this thing existing, you know, actually just kind of is it predatory against people who are like down to abuse this, you know, like, oh, gambling addiction is a thing, and when you can do it from your home with no barrier to entry in this weird semi-legal kind of way where it feels like there are no repercussions. And when there are highly publicized stories of people making apparently a shitload of money, then yes, they take responsibility for it, but also like to what extent are you willing to tolerate that going on? You know, how much of that is actually legit? Yeah.
I guess I would put it this way. Like, I don't think the people, Steam or these YouTubers, even went into it saying like, hey, I'm going to violate FTC rules and manipulate kids to gamble. Like, they probably thought, hey, here's a clever way to get people to invest a ton of money in this. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I get to take responsibility in that, you know, the people who did this or who set this up weren't explicitly trying to create the environment, but they still did. and ignorance of the law is no excuse, yada, yada.
I guess more what I mean is it seems to me that gambling on Call of Duty is something that people should have realized was not on the up and up.
Yeah. I mean, I
feel like, you know, this isn't like, you know, this isn't like, you know, I don't know, some online, you know, video poker or something, you know, you know, screwing people over like this. This is something that I feel like anyone would know, like, is going to be blatantly, for example, against the terms of use of whatever game you're playing. Mm-hmm. You know, stuff like that.
You underestimate how dumb 13-year-olds can be.
Yeah,
I'm talking, you know, explicitly about adults, not 13.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I mean, then it gets into stuff that we just don't know. What is the percentage of, you know, people who are older? And then I would probably put forward, if you're the kind of person who would fall for that, you especially need this to not exist. Like a fool and his money are soon separated, but it's still, you know, a huckster who is doing the separating. And
oh yeah. And like gambling addiction, I mean, like definitely there's a lot of people who prey on that, and that's not legit.
Yeah. I don't know, I cast a sideways glance at this. We've been going for a while. I apologize for stretching this out. I just, it's a really weird thing in a world that I have no insight into, but yeah. I I don't know, I was kind of shocked watching their videos themselves before they took them down, and then kind of going down the rabbit hole.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question, and Lord Will and Creek Don't Rise, you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Well, since we are right now immediately after Independence Day, and when people are listening, you know, within a week, I asked, or rather Ollie suggested that we ask, what game has made you feel the most and or least patriotic?
Yeah, it's a good timely question, I assume.
Wait, isn't Ollie Irish?
Yes, he's from Ireland.
Hey, USA does not have a monopoly on patriotism.
Clearly, the person on our podcast who is most serious in the community that is most serious about Independence Day is Irish. I find that kind of epic.
Hey, you know, patriotism doesn't mean just American patriotism. You can be proud of wherever you're from. In fact, I'm going to be curious to see if that actually happens.
Oh, yeah. No, I just mean the Independence Day thing.
Oh, yeah. Let's take a look here. So David writes, Resident Evil 4. Leon got beat up, stabbed, shot, infected by a biological weapon, and played by Ada several times just to rescue the president's daughter. That game does have an NES game setup, doesn't it?
It really kind of does.
Well, see here's
still
the thing.
Down to its essence.
That game, though, actually causes conflict for me because my dad's family is from Spain. We still have family in Spain. And so I was born in America, but my family's from Spain and we still keep in contact with them and go visit them and stuff. And so the game takes place in Spain and all the bad guys are like, well, theoretically, most of them are supposed to be Spanish. So
Spanish villagers, rural countryside kind of
stuff.
Yeah. Castle dwellers. Thing. Yeah.
Castle dwellers. Oh, Lord. Anyway, sorry.
In the game. I'm not calling all Spanish.
I know. I was just having flashbacks to people in the game and just facepalm. Oh,
badass.
My God, the facepalming. Anyway.
It'd be pretty badass if all people in Spain lived in castles.
Yeah. Man, to live in a castle. Not like a nice one, but more like Kanehurst or something like that. Just, you know, drafty, windy, up on a cliff.
Do they ever explain, like, how these random people whose, like, apparently most advanced technology is a chainsaw are able to kidnap the president's daughter?
I think they just played a trick. Well, I mean, they're like the
Scooby-Doo style?
Yeah.
Yeah, like on all the Secret Service agents that were supposed to be guarding her.
Yep.
Okay.
Jala, what does Brandon say?
Brandon says, Freedom Fighters for the PS2. It was a squad-based tactical-ish shooter in which you played play a plumber who rises up against a Soviet invasion, Red Dawn style. Towards the end of the game, your enemies describe you as the Freedom Phantom. That or Wolfenstein, the New Order. Wolfenstein. Anyway, nothing more patriotic than killing Nazis.
Yes, I too agree, comrade. Freedom Fighters is one of them. What is the game where you end up either punching out Osama bin Laden, or there's another one where you have to snipe Saddam?
The punch out Osama bin Laden, I think, was just called like War on Terror or something.
Yeah, I remember, boy oh boy, the people who would either trade that in or buy it used.
Oh gosh.
I don't like to you can argue how much I like to do it. I'm not proud of stereotyping, but boy oh boy. Let's see here. David, what does Chase say?
Chase says, at the risk of going with an obvious choice, Fallout 3 hit me where I live. DC was a regular vacation destination for me growing up, and seeing the ruins of what I always thought to be nigh on eternal touched me in a way I didn't expect.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
It's weird what you don't realize you have affection for until it's gone, or until you see it mistreated in media.
Until it gets nuked.
Yep.
We need a video game set in Cincinnati so I can get a feel for this. Fallout 5.
What's that bank heist movie coming up?
Oh, I don't know.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, it is set in Cincinnati.
It's like Marauders or something with...
That person.
Yeah, the dude. The dude with the stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, with McClane.
Yeah. What you what we need is a video game version of either Traffic or that one Three Doors Down video that was shot in Overlook Park.
What's the roller skating video or movie?
Yeah, I know which one you're talking about, which is really funny. But we're not going to do this. We're not going to make this whole episode trying to remember the names of things.
I guess for Cole and I, we can claim Shawshank, right?
I mean, yeah, like if Shawshank Prison was blown up, I would be pretty sad. What would happen to Andy? He escaped. Yeah. Dennis, what does Michael say?
Michael says, in a strange alternate time stream way, the Command and Conquer Red Alert series, the over-the-top, sir, yes, sir, dialogue in the troops had me seeing stars and stripes, because nothing says let freedom ring like laser tanks. Truer statement has never been uttered.
Yeah. I agree. My only experience with Command and Conquer is generals, and that is something that I think people look sideways at, but... Steven writes, the beginning of Medal of Honor Frontline, effectively the D-Day scene from Saving Private Ryan, always sits in the back of my head anytime I see a tribute to veterans or something like that. Because you lived it, man.
Hells yeah.
I've played that. It's like a it's like an arena combat fight. is what
oh,
it
really?
Is. Yeah, it's like I remember playing it, being like all psyched out, hearing it talked up. But then again, how can you actually do that justice?
Wait a second. I think I've played this.
Yeah.
It's the first mission in the game, right?
It's like either the first or the second, something like that.
Yeah. So I remember it having the awkward like juxtaposition of being this like big dramatic set piece, but also the tutorial. And so how do you work, like, you know, here's how you look, here's how you run into the first mission.
Yeah.
Into D-Day.
Yeah. Press X to see a whole generation of young men ruined.
Yeah.
and its sequel found in Battlefield 1. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Let's see here. I said that, right? So Jala, what does Gustavo say?
Gustavo says, Stellaris. I will roleplay and feel super patriotic over any civilization I play. Playing an individualistic, militaristic, materialist, direct democracy, science and democracy for all, or else. Militaristic xenophobe? Only enough room in the galaxy for one sentient species. Let the purging begin.
The gates are open. Yeah. Man, I want Stellaris to go on sale so I can play it. That looks like a good game. It was not on deep enough discount during the Steam sale.
Not more than 75%.
I mean, 50% is actually my marker for most of these.
Okay.
Which makes me feel like a terrible person, but I mean, if I'm going to buy something without thinking, I want to think about it. Or at least have rules, you know? Yeah. David, what does Ollie say?
Sure. So Ali says, the Saboteur. It's not every day I get an Irish protagonist, so it was nice. But I've always been down with my Americanness, and I gotta say, playing as Jack Bauer in the 24 game made me feel very patriotic. America!
I forgot there was a 24 game.
Yeah, they put a lot of effort into like the intimidate versus nice guy versus like the social mechanic with the people you're torturing, the you know, interaction, I guess.
So they did like an Alpha Protocol kind of thing?
Very much so, yeah.
Huh. Let's see here. Dennis, what does Franz say?
Franz says, Wetrix, I'm Dutch. Catching water is what we do.
Yeah. Wetrix is fun. That is I think it was made by Tetris, or I'm thinking of Weltris. They were both weird N64 puzzle games. Anyway, finally, we have Allison, who writes in saying, I always wanted to play the old From game, Metal Wolf Chaos, where you play as the president in a giant mech suit, and the final boss is called the Fight House.
That's fantastic. Have any of you guys watched any of like any Let's Plays or anything like that for that game?
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing.
It's bug nuts is what it is.
That really, like, that needs to do, like, a abject suffering or something like that.
If Xbox games were easier to do, we would totally want to do, like a Bonfire Side Chat kind of a appendix episode about it, or an off-season thing. Because, like, it's FromSoft. you know. Mm-hmm. But it's just hard to get a hold of and run, and I don't want to cover something I can't play, you know.
I always wondered on that one, like, at, you know, because all my understanding is this is one of those games where, like, even Japan, all the voice acting's in English.
Right.
Did, like, none of the voice actors at any point be, like, pull someone aside and be like, you do realize none of this dialogue makes sense, right?
they got to get paid, you know? Jella, I want to hear yours. What gets the Liberty Bell a-riggin'?
Well, see, I was going to say Broforce, but Eric said Broforce in his set, so that makes me mad.
Did I miss some, or was it?
Yeah, there's
refresh, bro.
Yeah. Oh. Refresh, homes. There's more.
I assumed you were cutting us off for time.
No, sorry. No.
Yeah, I thought so too.
I was not. Yeah, I thought it was like, oh, it's a real light response. So why don't you read Eric's? Well, okay, he just said Broforce.
He just said Broforce. The end. Well, it's really dumb, and it's really silly. It's really fun, and it's super Merkin. So, mm-hmm. I mean, like, if anything's going to make you feel like Merka, that game is going to make you feel it. So,
yeah. Yeah. Huh. Yeah, well, there's no reason we can't finish this all off. Sorry for the false alarm there. Graham writes, Canada doesn't have much in the way, much in the place of video games, but I liked the inclusion of Canada in Deus Ex Human Revolution. You could tell that, that Canadians had a hand in the development of Human Revolution story and because according to the lore, Canada expands its military efforts in 2017 and becomes a major military superpower and then rides on incredible economic growth. It made me feel good about my home nation. and then in contrast, does not like Darkstalkers because it's a game where so many monsters of different nations fight in a tournament. You got an Australian punk rock zombie, Sahagin from
Sawagin.
Sawagin, there we go. Yeah. Sawagin from Brazil, a British werewolf and a Scottish succubus, among many other cool monsters. What does Canada get? A real doofy looking Sasquatch.
Well,
no thanks. What's that?
The thing is about the Sasquatch is that eventually they made it to where it's actually a girl in a Sasquatch costume. So it's a cute girl in a Sasquatch costume. So
it's a Sasquatch.
Not a monster. It's a furry. Oh, wait. Same thing.
Yeah.
JK, all up.
Thank you. I was going to have to pump the brakes for you there.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Wow, I didn't know you knew about Darkstalkers. I don't know about Darkstalkers.
I love
it just seems like a strange.
It's weird. It plays so weird. Like the mechanics are super crazy, but yeah. I like the different types of characters that are in it, and I like the music. The whole kind of setup of it is cool, but I have to agree, Sasquatch is pretty lame-o. Yeah. Sorry, Graham. I love you, bud, but Sasquatch has always been like my least favorite.
Yeah.
I'm surprised there's not more games set in Canada. I feel like it would be ripe for, like, particularly survival horror. I feel like it'd be real easy to, like, you know, you've got a lot of, like, you know, wilderness you could set things in, but, you know, a lot of, you know, there's actually people there.
Yeah. Let us know if we're missing any games that are not set in Canada, rather. Yeah. Dennis, what does Chris say?
Chris says, I felt the range of patriotic to unpatriotic whenever I play the U.S. in World War II Grand Strategy Hearts of Iron series. You know, depending on how well I'm doing or how god-awful everything is going. I had the same feeling with the old Sid Meier colonization. Sure, it was fun to colonize America and then have a revolutionary war eventually, but then there was the whole Manifest Destiny thing and slaughtering Aztecs because they totally had all the gold I needed, and I totally needed money. Mm. Come on! You know, definitely mixed emotions.
Yeah, it's a shame. Is Hearts of Iron new?
Aztecs.
Yeah. And David, round us out with Josh.
Sure. Just says Contra for the NES. I'm not sure if there was even an American flag showing in that game, but to me, it just summed up 80s patriotism. The also Red Dawn movie.
Yeah. The 2012 remake. Yeah. So Jal, did you have any? Did you have anything else besides Broforce? Is that still your primary answer?
Well, see, I don't really play a lot of games where patriotism comes into play, except I guess Metal Gear. But yeah. like, But the only thing I can think
is
like,
it's in the name. Come on.
It's maybe like Sniper Elite 3 where you kill Hitler. That was a lame DLC though. That was like the crappiest DLC. So yeah, I don't know. Like, but you kill Nazi people there too and stuff. So I guess if we're gonna go with, hey, killing Nazis is patriotic, then I guess Sniper Elite.
Man, all this revolves around killing. I guess it's just
yeah,
games.
Murder people. America. That's the yeah.
Also the Long Dark set in Canada.
Yeah, I was gonna say that, but I forgot there the name go. Of it. Yeah, that's the survival game that I bounced off of so hard.
Really? Yeah.
I just bounced off of it. I was like in really early alpha. I got it for like a couple bucks.
But, oh.
Yeah.
I think that's on my wish list.
That might be good. I just bounced off of it. Let's see here. For me, it's not like a whole game, but like an individual scene in the Lair of the Shadow Broker DLC for Mass Effect 2. You're fighting your way through a museum, like a space museum, where they have like a bunch of Earth artifacts, and you know, you're destroying a whole bunch of stuff as you have this gunfight around all these cases and amongst these statues, and inexplicably. For like one particular shot, it's like at the end of this fight, there's a glory shot of like Shepard taking a knee in front of a gigantic American flag. In a series where you don't go to Earth until the very end of the third game. And you never like nothing is about America. It's all about the United Systems or whatever. Like, that is so out of place and so uncharacteristic that like, I don't know. It made me tear up. It made me cry. No, that's an exaggeration, but that is the most like strangely patriotic thing I've seen, which has to be a joke because that's made by a Canadian studio. So yeah, that is my example of patriotism in games. I don't know if it makes me feel patriotic, but you know, I've never been about following the rules, man. Dennis, how about you?
I know least patriotic is Grand Theft Auto 4. The entire premise of that game is just systematically demolishing the American dream. So I feel like it does a pretty good job of that.
Yeah.
Most patriotic is tough. Probably just because it's top of mind, but I would say like the XCOM games, like let's stand up for Earth, let's get those alien bastards, and
yeah.
That kind of stirs that emotion.
And David, round us out.
Sure. I'd say even though the game itself was kind of shit, Homefront is pretty good on patriotism.
Whole let's fight to take our country back kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, and yeah, I like some of the stuff. I like that a lot of the weapons. Most of them are like. Things that you know you could conceivably have access to, so there's just some neat features and that kind of like.
You know what I feel like there's a void in is game. It feels like games for patriotism either go like the over the top cynical, we're bro force just making fun of it patriotism, or it's the Spec Ops the line like we're actually monsters attack. And I can't really think of any that are just like genuinely. Have it unironically, which it might be Homefront. I don't know. I haven't played it, but
it's
Homefront's. Homefront is not ironic. It maybe should be.
Yeah. I mean, it very much is like, Red Dawn, the game.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like it's kind of in that, let's revive the Red Scare to, make fiction out of it, except this time
nostalgia for the Red Scare.
Yeah, I know, right? Just when all of us could die at any moment.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's a weird thing because I don't consider myself. I mean, I was thinking about this today, actually, or no, yesterday. Sorry, time is meaningless. I was thinking about it yesterday. Like, man, like, dude, am I proud of this place? Like, it's a lofty idea. I've never been like an especially like patriotic person, but like, I don't know. I think I like where I live. I think I'm more like locally. I have like local allegiances. I like my city a lot, but it is a weird emotion. And I think that like, as strange as it sounds, like Metal Gear Solid is kind of the series that is most thoughtfully engaged with like the idea of what it means to belong to and fight for a country. Not in a way that I think is like really you know, constructive, or like I would even say like deep and profound, but it is the one that is most like systemically concerned with that idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
An idea I admittedly haven't thought about very much. So yeah, thank you everybody for participating in that. We would love to hear from you again. Those questions generally go up on Tuesdays, middle of the day, late in the day, stuff like that. But yeah, let us see. I don't know. You can go there. It's facebook.com/thelevelpodcast.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past week or so. In Jala's case, it's been a while since we've had you on, so I want to lead with you.
It's been months. Are you ready for this?
No, need your fix.
Okay, so, all right. I've got a bunch of little short things that I'm going to just mention a little smidge about and then move on to the actual ones I want to discuss. Mm-hmm. So, listener, Jonathan and I beat Abyss Odyssey. Finally, I beat Abyss Odyssey with somebody. It was exciting. I streamed it, so it's on my YouTube, and that's exciting. So you can go watch it, and that's all. All right. I played Hero Siege and Night Squad with various people, as Dennis has already talked about, so I'm not gonna say anything else about that. That's the thing that happened. I also started playing Final Fantasy Tactics on my Vita. I've only ever played part of it, and I don't know if I'm going to actually play through the whole thing this time either, but anyway, like, that's a thing that's happening, sort of. And let's see. I let listeners vote on what I should stream after Bioshock, because I finished that, you know, last time I was on the show. And the original Witcher was what was picked. And I lasted the same amount as I did the first time I tried to play it, which is to say I finished the prologue. I got to the first chapter, and I was just like, it's not that this is like, it's just, it's not interesting to me. And I just stopped streaming for a while because I just didn't want to play it. And then I was just like, you know what? I didn't really flip a table or anything, but like, I don't want to play this game. So I'm just going to move on. And so I picked the runner up to play after that. And the runner up was DMC, because everybody yes. wants to see me get mad. So, and my hatred for this game starts at the title screen. It just loads up and I'm just already mad at it. I look at the screen and I'm like, oh my God. And like, I streamed the first couple of missions in one sitting, and that's about as much as I could take. I legitimately had a headache by the end. And I was just like laughing a lot and just kind of like face palming, because I'm like, I don't even understand why I hate this so much, but I hate every character. I want everyone to die. Everyone makes me mad.
Like, so I was gonna ask you for a short version of why you take umbrage at the game. That sounds like a pretty good summary of it. You just dislike everybody.
The way that they move, the way that they talk, everything about the character models, except like the demons are fine. I don't have a mm-hmm. problem with them. It's the humans. I don't like any of them at all. And I want to punch every character in the face.
Would you say that their faces are stupid?
Yes, they're stupid faces. Okay. And Virgil's hat is stupid. I don't like his hat.
I think everyone agrees that Virgil's hat is stupid.
Okay, good. Well, anyway.
No one likes the trophy.
So, well, anyway, I will say, however, it teaches controls very well. And although I am extremely control dumb, I was able to pick it up and play it with no problems whatsoever. But it's just a little bit too edgy and emo for me. I just can't. There's nothing really dreadfully awesome about the gameplay so far, so I do need to ask this question, because this is important as to whether or not I keep trying to play this or not. Does the gameplay do anything interesting past Mission 2, or is it pretty much more of same crap in different scenarios and whatnot? I don't care about the story or the characters, obviously, so like, if there's not gameplay for me ahead, I don't want to play it.
Do you have either the light or the dark weapons yet?
Are you talking about like the mystical magical, I inherited this from my papa, big axe-y looking thing or whatever? The demon one and the angel one is training me Castlevania bullshit. Yeah,
because I mean that was like the main one I saw.
I think you get more like more combos for them as you go through. The main thing is being able to rapidly switch between those three weapons. And yeah. For me, that was just incredibly satisfying, especially as you build up your moveset and you can just combo and combo and combo and combo. So that's the big thing.
We'll see for me.
If you're there and you don't like it, then...
Yeah, I guess it's because I have not in a long time. I am rusty, but I used to play fighting games. Mashing buttons and combinations just by themselves without any real more art to it is just kind of like, eh. You know, like it's kind of like the problem I have with Injustice where I'm like, this is kind of all right, but I mean, like, it's just pushing buttons. Yeah. You know, like, there's no skill involved in that for me the same way. I mean, like, it's timing, yes, but not enough to make me excited about it when I hate the characters and I want to kill everyone. Yeah. So,
have you tried Devil May Cry 1 or 3?
No, I have. Like, I played bits of the original Devil May Cry and then Devil May Cry 2, little bits, and I didn't have any problem with those.
But... Yeah, I mean, I didn't like your description. Kind of describes what I don't like about DMC, and I really liked Devil May Cry 1 and 3, so maybe the other ones, if you ever got a chance to try them. But
I almost picked up 3 on the sale, Steam sale, but the PC port is apparently shit, and Devil May Cry 4 was just too expensive for me to jack with, and I don't play anything on my console, so there's not even a point in me trying to, you know, get console.
I don't know if 4 is any good or not.
Well, 3, if I bought that on a console, it would just sit on my shelf with Last of Us and Metal Gear Solid 4 because they're on my console. I'm not going to play them.
No. Sure.
Okay, so anyway, I played that. And okay, well, if that's the case, then I may just drop playing that and then move on to Bioshock 2 or Fallout New Vegas.
Hold on. As someone who loves DMC and who played it on the hardest difficulty, the Hell in Hell difficulty, there's a lot more to it than just mashing buttons. Continue.
Okay, well, you have to qualify that statement if you're gonna, you know, like, try to convince me
difficulty are you playing on?
I'm playing it on normal because I haven't played this game before.
Gotcha. I would say Devil May Cry the reboot does not follow the predecessors in its difficulty, and so you can get through by just mashing buttons. When you play on the harder difficulties, like, you kind of have to, you more have to kind of learn the game, and there does come a little bit more to it than mindlessness.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not. That's my not convinced voice. If I'm gonna play something that's gonna take a lot of time for me to go through and whatever, I would rather go play another game that interests me in some way, shape, or form other than just mechanics. Like, if the mechanics aren't really selling me on this and I hate the characters and I'm not interested in the story through the first couple of missions, like...
Yeah. I mean, like, there are even, like, better character action games to play, like, you know, Metal Gear Rising or something like that. Like,
yeah, see, the Sam had suggested that I switch over. He's like, seriously, just put that down and go play DMC 3 or, you know, Devil May Cry 3 or, you know, play, you know, Revengeance or something.
I think you would like Revengeance. I think its version of silly would probably entertain you.
Yeah.
As long as it's not so edgy and emo and like...
No,
it kind of is, but... in a better way.
Well, here's the thing. I see his photo or his whatever, his painting of his mother, and I just started facepalming so hard. I'm like, she looks like an emo rock singer, like from fucking Evanescence or some shit. Like, what is this? I'm so mad.
which one? Did DMC?
I don't know. DMC.
Okay,
yeah.
I was going to say.
I was just mad, I was just like, whatever. And then why is there just like this crap metal stuff like popping up in the middle of all these fights? Oh my God, you're just making me mad. All this stuff is making me mad. Like, everything just needs to be muted. And then every cutscene needs to be skipped. And even then, like, the gameplay isn't exciting to me, so.
Yeah.
Damn. All right.
I've given up on trying to get you to like that game, but I think there is a lot of really good stuff there.
That's okay. I'm really doubting your opinion of everything, Dennis, because another game I played was Danganronpa, and I've got some stuff to say about that. So, I wanted to play something on my Vita in the middle of all the crazy flooding because I was disinclined to grab a raft to go out to my building to go, you know, play in my office on my PC. So I picked up Danganronpa because, you know, like you and Cole talked a lot about this game and how exciting it was and you like it so much and whatever. So before I comment on the game, I'll say this. I played it consistently and I beat it in a week or so. So there's enough there that I actually kept on playing it and picking it up and going on with it. So as much as I'm probably going to sound like I'm reaming it over the coals, there was enough there for me to finish it. Whereas I drop games, I've already dropped like Witcher and DMC, they're already like gone, you know?
Yeah.
So I mean, like, I like this one better than that. There are things about it I really don't like, so I don't know if I want to continue with the series. Now I'll go on. I used to watch a lot of anime back in the day, and I stopped watching anime because of tropes. I got so sick of being able to predict everything. This game is full of tropes. I predicted the order of the murders. I predicted a lot of the things that happened. I predicted certain parts of the scenarios. Of course, I didn't predict everything, but a large chunk of the stuff that goes on in this game, I already knew before we even got to the point where they start talking about it. So the exposition was drudging for me because I already knew a long time ago, and I know that they're playing to the lowest common denominator, but if I'm trying to be entertained by this game and I have to sit here and listen to them talk about it, you know, piece by piece forever and a day, like, oh, you know, it gets drudging at times. There are parts where I didn't know what the hell was going on, and those parts were fun and exciting to me. So, you know, there were good parts, but it just kind of like swiveled back and forth between the two a lot. And the problem, I think, is just my familiarity with anime and tropes in general. I was talking to Dennis about this separately because, you know, you, Dennis, don't have that acquaintance with all the tropes, and I think that works in your favor because
yeah,
you don't
like
have
that served me really well.
We've talked about that even like on the show in the past. Like, I know just enough to be disdainful, but like when something like this, you know, engages with it, you know, and just to cover old ground, like in such an extreme way, you know, and my disdain is born mostly of, you know, kind of slightly informed ignorance. So like enough of it, you know, I wasn't kind of like looking at it with the they live glasses like you did, but like that unfamiliarity does help you kind of like, you don't have the antibodies for a lot of the stuff that's going on there just yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, see, I was talking to a slacker in the Level channel about this. I forget which one, but he really loved the ending. And the problem for me is that it completely epitomized everything that had burned me out of watching anime. It just was all of that crap that I didn't like, or rather it's
the
not
power
crap
of friendship.
Anyone else. Yeah, it's that among various other things, but like it's the super, super tropey stuff that like seemed to be at the time that I was watching anime churned out in en masse by like every studio, you know. Mm-hmm. It was like in every anime series, and I was just like done with it, you know, and then here it is, and I was just like, I just wanted to throw my Vita. I was so mad.
Is a boilerplate is I think an appropriate word for what you're describing.
Yeah, and so like, and then too, like a lot of stuff they just wait until the very end of the game, and then they're just kind of like, oh, and by the way, bleh, exposition, and it's like, what? That's half-assed. That is so half-assed. Like, whatever. I'm not happy with that. I tried out the extra school days mode or whatever, and that didn't make any damn sense to me, and I don't even know what the point of it is, so I just kind of stopped. It just made me mad because that was lame.
Yeah, I never did that. I didn't see the reason aside from doing side quests that you otherwise wouldn't have been able to do.
I was just curious to see what it was, and I'm like, well, even after the ending, I will say I still wanted to go through and then see what the hell that was, and I played it for about an hour, and I'm like, I can't take this anymore. I really can't take this anymore. And I think between that stupid extra mode that I just don't get, and then like the ending just made me just mad. And I don't know if I would get Danganronpa 2 unless there's a sale, or unless somebody can tell me that they do something more interesting with like the crap they dump on you at the end or something. You know, like, is there a reason for me to go on if I'm burned out on the tropes that are making that they're building this up on? Like, I was talking to listener Steven about this, and he doesn't know much about anime in general. And so, like, I was just telling him about the things I don't, you know, like what bugged me about this game. And he was just like, if I didn't know any better, I would say that they're making fun of these tropes. And I'm like, well, if they did, it was in such a way that it still was really annoying to me.
Yeah, I mean, they're like, still, even if they're making fun of it, they're still using it.
Yeah. And so I wanted to like it. I liked the music. I liked some of the elements of it, but some of it just kind of like, I don't know if I want to pay full price for another one of these games.
Yeah, you know, and just like it's a visual novel. Like the it has the trial sections with some kind of ill-advised minigames, at least in my opinion. But like, if you don't like the story or the characters or anything that happens, your entire reason for being there is moot. You know, like ways that they take it and twist it into, I think, are really interesting. I think Dennis would probably agree based on our previous conversations. But like, mm-hmm. yeah, if you can't play the game without feeling physical pain, then yeah, don't.
Well, I think it's just mostly like, okay, the tropes themselves in and of themselves are not really the problem because they're in a different setting than I've seen some of them before. I can tolerate them to
high school
degree.
With people with special abilities.
Yeah, exactly. Well, but anyway, I mean, like, this is a specific type of scenario that's a little bit different. But I mean, like, the main thing is, like, you pile enough of the tropes on there and then you prove the tropes right by letting me, like, me being able to predict everything that's going on way before any of it goes on.
Yeah.
Like, that makes it not fun because, like I said, the parts where I didn't know what was going on, where they turned it on its head or they, you know, were totally inscrutable and there's no way I could have figured it out, like, those were fun. But those parts where they take those tropes and they just play into them, that made me not like it. If they had taken all those tropes and seriously just done something completely different than what you're expecting with every part of that, they could have done that and that would have been great. I would have loved this game.
Mm-hmm.
Loved it, you know, but they didn't. A lot of it, like part of it, they threw random stuff in there, but then, you know, a lot of it was by recipe, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it still was what it was.
Yeah. So I will say though, now this is, I don't know if this is going to be like more volatile conversation in the future. I picked up Virtue's Last Reward and Steins Gate. So
Steins Gate, I can see if you're, not down for anime trips, like, you know, for me, like knowing the little bit that I know, I saw a bunch of it there anyway. So that may end up, if you can look past that to the kind of cool time travel story, that would probably be there. Yeah, I think the VLR is like legit a really good game.
It's not necessarily that it has tropes. It's mm-hmm. just that I was expecting more from Danganronpa than what I was getting.
Yeah, I mean, just
you
like,
know? Like you, I was. Ex- mm-hmm.
You had you know, all you had to go on was the praise of two people who don't have your They Live classes. So like, I feel bad that I had a hand in steering you wrong in it because it sounds like you're really angry about it. But it's like we have such different like experiences with the genre, I think.
Yeah.
That it's like, yeah. You know, I hope you don't like look down on that, like you question the recommendations and stuff around it. You know?
I will admit this fully. After I played that game, I was just like, I want to flip a table. I question any recommendations from Dennis or Cole. Like, mm-hmm. I was just like, I don't know if I trust anybody anymore.
Yeah. Well,
to be fair, I question everything that Dennis and Cole say. I'm not even sure that's their real name.
No, but anyway, no, like it's not, like I said, it's not that it has tropes. It's just what I was expecting them to do with it and what they did with it were not.
Yeah.
In line. And so I may play Steins Gate and it may be completely tropey as shit and I may be completely fine with it. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, it just depends on what you have the antibodies for, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So
what I would recommend is giving yourself amnesia. and you should be able to enjoy it just fine because you won't be expecting all the tropes.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, anyway,
Never mind.
Yeah. I mean, I still don't take back my recommendation of it. Like I still think it's a good time.
I think if you are like me and you've been down that road enough and you already know all the tropes, you may not like the game as much.
You've used the word tropes. I know what it means. Like you know by the dictionary definition. Give an example of like something that like stuck out.
Otaku nerd. otaku nerd and idol singer and martial artist super serious with the honorable storyline and whatever, like, you know, the bubbly Genki girl. I can go on. I mean, they're all just every last one of them.
I mean, just, so those
and
are
then the, and then those mediocre, are... the mediocre dude who's the main character guy.
Yeah, Makoto.
I mean, like, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, those are character archetypes that they use.
They put them
into a bottle. But
even then, a lot of the things that go on, like the way that the interactions play out, a lot of those sequences are sequences I've seen done many times. So those interactions are what led me to say, that person's going to do this, this person's going to do this. And I knew beforehand, before the murder even happened, what was going to happen roughly. And I mean, not details, but, you know, this person's going to die, that person did it, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the sequences of events and the way that the interactions played out were such that I've seen it. So, if you don't have that kind of burned out, I saw way too much anime back in the day kind of thing going on, you would probably really like this game. But
yeah, whereas for me, the only stuff that stuck out was like the weird sexualization of young women.
Oh, yeah, that's like a given.
Yeah.
You know, in a visual novel from Japan, that is pretty much a given. Sorry, but that's everything I've played that is a visual novel from Japan has that in it. So. Anyway, I do have another one, but I've been talking for a while. I can cut it out.
Yeah, we
I don't have much, so you are not running me out.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. The last thing I've got to talk about is Moon Hunters. This is an indie game that was gifted to me by David Petroco. Thank you, David. So it is a short indie game. You are a moon worshiper, and you have 5 days until a sun-worshipping king declares war on your clan. And that, like, that guy is like the end boss of the game. A run-through of the game takes about an hour or so. It's called on their site a co-op personality test. It has like role-playing elements to it, and you can have another person playing. The local co-op is okay, but the online version is in beta right now. Co-op, however, just defaults to whatever player one chooses is what, you know, is chosen for the group. So nothing is really different about how the story plays when you have a second player versus when you play alone. But anyway, like there's different types of characters that you can play through as, and you know, you pick different actions to up different stats, you help people and whatever. It's kind of, it plays somewhat like Unrest did when I played that game. Except this one has like fighting in it and stuff like that. Hmm. So, it's a pretty neato little game. It's real short. I think it'd be worth it to check out just to like poke around in. It's a pretty interesting little game.
Sounds like a more mechanical Yogg.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. So. Moon Hunters.
Yeah.
Nice. Dennis, since you chimed in to say that you didn't have much of anything, what do you got?
Yeah, so when I say I don't have much of anything, I mean I have a ton of XCOM 2. So the interesting thing happened that they dropped their third and final DLC pack in the middle of my current campaign. So I had a probably 3/4 baked game done when this extra stuff became available. And the final DLC pack allows or introduces a new soldier type, mech troopers. Which mechs were in Enemy Within. They're like kind of big, powerful units that can't benefit from cover.
Okay. They are their own
really
cover.
Really cool. Exactly. They are their own cover, and in many cases, they provide cover for other soldiers as well. Like, literally stand behind this mech is a way to take cover. So really cool idea. The problem is that since I was so advanced in the game, and apparently when you have them from the beginning, they're introduced fairly early on, that meant that anything I had for the mechs was very underpowered, and I would have had to level it up time and time again, like invest to build into their equipment so much that it's just not worth it this time around for me to to build them.
Does the expansion content like give new stuff for you to fight against?
That's a good question. I'd have to go look and see if they give enemy types as well. Yep. I have encountered enemy mechs in the game. However, that was before and after the DLC dropped. I know what I did miss was a special story mission.
So with the first DLC, which I had from the start, there's a special story mission where one of the main characters comes with you, and there's kind of more crazy stuff that happens than more crazy and scripted stuff that happens than would in your typical randomly generated mission. So I missed that. It just put the item that I got from or would have gotten from that mission into my inventory. Mm-hmm. I'll be interested to play with it the second time around, but just not worth it this time.
Yeah.
What was interesting is I've talked at length about how buggy XCOM is, right? And just how the game will crash on you or have weird things happen with the camera. And that's just price of entry. But they had a very well thought out design for if you opened up, you know, a midway through campaign when this DLC released. There was like a little post that explained, hey, the new DLC is out. It's available to you now. You won't get the story context mission. Would you like to turn it on for this mission? Or would you like to wait until a new game to actually turn on the DLC?
Yeah.
So that surprised me. Like it's a game that generally has very rough edges, and that was just a very well done interface design.
It's
element.
Like a Bethesda kind of move.
Yeah. So that was a nice little surprise. I look forward to playing with mechs. Otherwise, I am just grinding with my God of Death troopers that are unstoppable now, and I'm closing in on the end.
So you're over the power curve.
I'm over the power curve. And I kind of had to remind myself, like, you don't have to drag your feet. You can kind of charge into some of these missions. Because generally, if I get what I know is a big story mission, the default XCOM reaction is like, drag your feet, do other easier stuff, wait as long as possible until you absolutely have to do the mission and then do it. Whereas now it's like something pops up and I'm like, yeah, let's go smash some aliens. So that feels good. I think I'm probably in the last 20 to 10% of the game, which is good because I've got 50 hours in this game now for the first run.
Oh, wow.
On normal difficulty. So
yeah,
it's robust and I'm already chomping at the bit to get back into it.
Yeah.
From the start.
I know every single time I see you on Steam, you're in that game.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing is I looked up some Lovely Planet, speedrun videos, like I said, I would last time. And I was right. Like it's just unbelievable watching people skipping around the geometry, in ways that I just wouldn't have thought were possible. So that's cool.
Yeah.
That's me.
Cool. So XCOM 2 and then some little bit of Lovely Planet research.
Yep. Yep. Oh, I played Overwatch. The big news is that ranked mode debuted.
Yeah. And, how'd that work out for you?
I killed it in my placement games. So you do 10 placement games to give you an initial rank, and then you kind of go up or down from there. Mm-hmm. So I went 7-3 in my placement games. One of the games I had to like leave because a kid woke up. So like I probably could have won that one. And got placed really high, gained a level. So I got up to level 51 and higher is better. And then just since then I've been bleeding ranks.
No.
So don't know what happened there. I'm still having a ton of fun, but ranked mode is intense.
Yeah.
It is largely without the saltiness that you find in like a League of Legends though, which is really nice.
Yeah. I have not seen any chat in my time with the game. So
generally doing like solo queue ranked games, you have one or two people on a mic per time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but, yeah. Fuck doing any kind of like voice chat in public. Nope, not going to do that. Not for me.
I've had a good experience. Like I said, this is not the kind of community that other games that are notoriously just hostile have.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you don't need it. It helps if you're on a big team, but mm-hmm. It's all good. Playing with a lot of Duckfeed folks. So hi, everyone that is on there. It's a really good community within our community.
Yeah. Awesome. Let's see. So is that all?
Yeah, that's it.
Cool. David, how about you? What up?
Sure. I've actually not played a great deal this week. Been doing... Dark Souls 3, just kind of running around taking care of the sorcerer fellow, because until really late in the game I didn't have enough intelligence to recruit him.
Okay. You mean your trainer?
Yeah.
Okay.
So Yeah, so mainly just going through that, buying all his spells and stuff like that.
Yeah. Are you running a sorcerer build?
I am not. Okay. I cannot cast magic.
Then why are you doing it?
Well, two reasons. One just because I've kind of obsessively bought all the unique items so far from the vendors.
Okay.
And secondly, so that I can recruit him for the final boss.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. I see. So you have not beaten the game yet, but like you are just kind of like lining up the deck chairs.
Exactly. Yep. Yep. So, and then, just kind of continuing on through Doom, unlocked a couple more weapons. I'm not entirely sure what to say about it, because I mean it's kind of everything is very much this is kind of a player's game. So I feel like anything I would say about it, all of the game is the playing, you know?
Yeah, like it's all the feel.
Yeah. So,
have you gotten to hell yet?
I've not yet. No. Okay. No. I'm running around the refinery area.
Okay.
Which is I guess like kind of the second main area, second or third main area depending on how you consider it. But it seems to be unlocking weapons at a fairly good clip, as I've got the machine gun and the plasma rifle.
Okay.
Yeah. Right now it's fairly stingy with ammo. I don't know if that's normal from the like previous Doom games.
I mean, you generally had to be pretty mindful of the way that you spent your resources in them. You got a bunch of stuff, but like each level was a little bit of kind of like a closed system that gave you, you know, a little bit more than enough to do it the right way.
Sure.
At least I guess
what this is it's kind of a thing where it's like, say like every third enemy maybe, you know, drops ammo. And so it's never like there's not enough ammo,
mm-hmm.
but like, for example, the shotgun, like by default can only hold like 20 rounds.
Right.
Is, you know, all you can pick up. So it's at like any given time, you don't have much ammo.
Yeah.
But like at the end of a fight, usually when I go and pick up everything, I'm usually back at maximum for everything.
In theory, you're supposed to be brutalizing these demons to death to save ammo, right?
Yes and no. Yeah. The other thing is the way they implement the chainsaw on this is it's a separate weapon that you press square to, you know, bring it up. And any enemy you kill with the chainsaw just drops mass amounts of ammo.
Oh,
yeah.
So it's more thing. It's not ammo conservation is definitely not a thing. It's but at the same time, your kind of reserve at any given time is never very deep.
Yeah.
So it feels like you should be able to upgrade your clip size or something.
Right. Which you can. You can.
Ah.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like the default just is notably low, and I didn't know if that was kind of characteristic of the game or no. But yeah, other than that, this is more a preview of things to come. But Dennis and I picked up Divinity: Original Sin on the Steam sale with the intent to stream it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just, you know, since we're, going to co-op it, I haven't, you know, actually played anything, but just kind of, you know, went in and looked, and it seems pretty exciting. I don't know if any of you guys played this at all. It looks very, very, like, hardcore, almost like a Neverwhere Nights type of thing.
Yeah, like this, it's a top-down, RPG kind of thing. where you're mm-hmm. kind of doing like a kind of light tactical combat. And the mm-hmm. thing with Divinity is, you know, you're kind of playing in pairs, or, you know, if you're playing solo, you have like a sidekick dude. And there's a heavy emphasis on the way, you know, resolving different situations and quests by talking.
Right. Yeah. There's that. And then there's also the two things, because you mentioned it being really deep, David. They tout a lot having a classless system mm-hmm. in that you're not pigeonholed.
It's just real tacky. Like, it rolls up into yeah. the party late, doesn't bring anything.
You know. But that, you know, you can build your character any way you want. So there's kind of like suggested starting sets of stats, but really you can build it however. And then also like elemental combat. I haven't played it yet. But elemental combat actually makes sense. So whereas in pretty much every other RPG, like status effects and poison and fire and all this stuff really don't have that much of an impact, they kind of take center stage here. And doing the elaborate setup of, oh, I'm going to knock over the barrel so there's water underground that I can electrocute and then turn into ice. And that actually pays off and is the best way to go versus being kind of this sideshow to just hitting them with a sword as hard as possible.
Yeah. Looks pretty good. I mean, I'm curious to hear what you guys do, especially like resolving that stuff and doing the tactical combat together. Like, that sounds like a good mm-hmm. time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have yet to firm up exactly like when we'll be doing what, but mm-hmm. keep an eye out for it.
Yeah. Is that all, David?
Yeah, I think that's it.
Okay. So I've got two, one of which is Overwatch, and I don't know that I have anything really to add to that conversation. Yay! besides two, you know, just two observations that I've made. First off, oh my God, this is a pretty game. Like, just and not just the way it looks, like the character designs are really good. I like how, you know, varied the way that they look is. I like the, you know, the, like the stages, you know, it really does feel like a good evolution from like Team Fortress 2, like yada, yada, all of that's great. But like the interface, oh my God. The color choices and the graphic kind of like cues that they give you, and different characters have like different interfaces that show you the right information that you need to be able to play them.
Mm-hmm.
All the way down to like the interstitial stuff for like going from game to game or picking your dudes. Like, everything about it is just so well designed. Oh my God, it's so pretty. Yeah, like, I was just marveling that. I was, like, switching characters. Like, I rolled up an AI match and switching characters just so I could see the different way that, like, they just their interface looked.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a super weird thing to be nerdy about, but, boy, does that add up to a great experience for it. Or not add up. It contributes to a great experience for it, you know?
Absolutely. It's the one game where I don't feel bad crawling around and looking at all the character stats, like, that feels very seamless.
Yeah. And so like the only game, actually, like, weirdly enough, that I've stopped and taken like a real note of and said, man, that is like some really ingenious design, at least recently anyway, it was like Dead Space. Like, it's been 8 years since the game has been like, oh wow, that is so inventive and great. Like, they just made a bunch of really good decisions with the way that they did this. And, you know, they do different things and they approach the problem in different ways, but wow. I don't know. I'm way down for it. The second observation is it's a really easy game to like play 15 minutes of and then put down. Like, the rounds are really short, you know, and that's probably not the way to get good at the game. I know for a fact I'm not good at the game. but you were right. What's her name? The Egyptian lady.
Oh, Farrah.
Yeah, Farrah. She's a great choice. Like,
Cloudy with a Chance of Justice.
I found myself, you know, going in and actually like contributing. Like, my muscle memory from using the soldier's rocket launcher in Team Fortress, specifically Team Fortress Classic, like carried over, and just the way that her movement ability, like the jetpack, complements that. Like, you just immediately have a good angle on people at, you know, mm-hmm. at the right time. Like, yeah, it's really great. And I did some stuff with Zen guy. Sorry, I don't know all these names.
Zenyatta.
Yeah, Zenyatta. It's kind of like the flexible offense and defense support kind of thing. And that ended up working out really well. Yeah. But like, going in and just like playing around on just quick play or whatever, I've been kind of shocked at how seamless that is and how much that kind of fits into, like, oh, here's a transitional activity. Like, I'm tired of doing one thing. I don't know exactly what I want to do next. Let's just do a couple of matches of this.
Oh, yeah, sure. It's a palate cleanser between other games, if you like.
Yeah. I mean, it can totally be that. And what I was worried about when I got into it was that it would, like, mandate and necessarily be something else.
Yeah. And the great thing is it also holds up if you want to binge it for an entire night.
Like, oh, yeah.
You can do that just as easy.
But yeah, it's real cool. I'm down with it, at least on that level. I haven't played with any Duck Feed people yet, but I want to try and get an opportunity to do it.
Yeah, that's the way to go. Just because it's a, like I said, a very supportive and fun community. Did you do the tutorial before you jumped in? And
yeah.
Was that part of the interface loveliness?
Yeah, I mean, it was like nothing really stuck out to me as being great about the tutorial. Like, mm-hmm. I felt like it walked me through everything that I needed to at least learn Soldier 76.
Yeah.
Yep.
And per David's point on previous episodes, that is a nice little touch point for anyone. It's like, this character, Soldier 76, is generic. If you've played any shooter at any point, you will be able to kind of have footing.
Yeah.
But then, have. Or...
But then they like throw a curveball and they give you the ability to delay down like healing fields. And like, I could totally see like playing him as, you know, not necessarily like your main hitter, but like fire support. Almost like mid range, like, hey, I'm gonna hang back and take pot shots and like lay this down so people can come back or, you know, or get healed on their way to the fight. Like, there's, you know, just enough of that kind of like, you know, and that may be wrong. People may be listening and say, no, you don't do that. You just, but like, I want to try it at the very least. Like, I think that saying, oh, it's just gun haver Call of Duty guy might sell him a little bit short, even.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a twist. I guess if they were going total gun haver, they would have put a grenade in that slot.
Yeah.
See, I know. I mean, I feel like having a backup heal is, you know, not... I feel like that would be... Whereas the rest of the character is a callback to Call of Duty, I'd say the heal is a callback to Battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
In that, like, having your assault... also be the healer has been that way since like the original Bad Company.
Hmm. Yeah, I just don't know enough to see that parallel.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. I need to get this off air. I don't know if you care. So feel free to delete this, but I need to get your BattleNet ID because I don't know if I have it.
It's in the spreadsheet in the co-op thing. I don't know the series of numbers that inexplicably trails my Blizzard ID. But yeah, anybody who's privy to that spreadsheet, if you're part of the Slack, like, that is there. Add me on BattleNet, and you can watch me pop in and then infuriatingly pop out.
Sounds good.
Yeah. The other thing is Zero Time Dilemma, which is probably a good contender for my game of the year so far.
Still as confusing?
Yeah, but like, it's, you know, I'm getting there. So I put about 18 hours into the game since it came out. And so, like, just over the course of about a week or so. And it's necessarily shorter. I mean, at least so far, it seems like it's wrapping up quicker than Virtue's Last Reward did. Like, Virtue's Last Reward is like a 30-hour game. You know, I'm going through, I'm filling out most of the global flow chart, you know, effectively at random. Like, you know, when you go to select your scene, it flashes like a little screenshot from it and then says like, hey, do you want to do this? And then it starts you out. And, you know, it is a cool exercise to keep track of what's happening in which timelines and to just kind of like jump into one of these things and figure out, okay, what are the assumptions about where I'm at right now? Because it can change. And then, true to form for the series, they will take that and then work it against you and make it even more confusing on top of that. And it works. You know, I'm sure that if you put it up to any amount of scrutiny for like how consistent it is, or, you know, like if it follows the laws of causality, it would, you know, read as what it really is, which is, you know, really stupid anime time travel stuff. But and the way they present it, and if you just kind of like go along for the ride in the moment, it does work really well. And questions that are raised in kind of like one place are answered in another. And because there is no kind of guarantee that, of what order you do any of this in, it just kind of has to work. And I think that, like, it very much is something that I feel like I am participating in putting this thing together. And, you know, I'm seeing a little bit more like exposition around some stuff as they start, kind of like summing things up and making it, you know, kind of a little bit more pat than I would like it to be. Like there's a little bit of that. I like that they backloaded it instead of front loaded it. because it very much is a game about kind of confusion and figuring out the way that, you know, like what happens if you take a story and then just kind of like cut it up into different pieces and then like upend it, you know, and that's kind of what you get. And I'm at the point where the known parts of the flowchart are filled in and like I'm starting to like pop all over the place in various ways that I didn't expect. And it's really affecting. Like I've been along for the ride for this, you know, with this series since the first one. And even if my opinion on the first one has soured a little bit, like it hasn't really aged that well. The first one being 9 hours, 9 persons, 9 doors. I feel like it's rewarding knowledge of that. And it really is like a straight up follow up to Virtue's Last Reward. And it is getting a lot of really good payoff off the back of it. Off the back of that connection. So like this is really good, and it stops being a visual novel. Like yes, there is an awful lot of, you know, watching people talk and watching action and stuff like that, but because like last week, you know, like I said last week, they have, you know, they take a more cinematic approach to it. It feels more like you know, like a Walking Dead or a Life is Strange or something like that. A Heavy Rain almost, where you do have a little bit of this choice, but because of the way the narrative works, you know, you don't even have the whole, wait a minute, it told me I chose, but I didn't really have a choice there. Like you don't feel bad about it because of the way it works. Like you're going to see all of it. So just buckle up and go for the ride.
So I watched a little bit of a, let's play just to try to, you know, kind of get a little bit of a hang on it. The one I watched was basically kind of the first first test with all three teams.
The coin flip?
Yeah, after that.
Oh, the execution test.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. So, you know, like someone, you know, all three teams doing that. Mm-hmm. And the thing that kind of struck me is it seemed like particularly the dialogue seemed a little bit, I don't know, kind of almost excessively cryptic.
Mm.
In terms of like, it almost seemed like the, like a lot of times where like characters would say something and it almost seemed like they're like, nope, I'm only allowed 5 sentences, even though I blatantly, you know, finish with something that, like, you know what I mean? Yeah.
I mean, just like that's what you're going to get into. Like, it doesn't have as high of a production value as it otherwise could. And, you know, there is like a little bit of contrivance to it. Like, you get those things where, like, it's weird the way they cut it off in some places. You know, I won't defend that. However, like, I think that, I don't know, maybe I'm just blind to it. Maybe I'm so far into this that I don't see that kind of flaw. That doesn't stick out to me or bother me about it.
Yeah, like I guess what I saw was, you know, there's the sequence in that where you can ask your teammates questions. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like for the vast majority of them,
oh, it was like
purposely not answer them.
Yeah, like hanging, leaving stuff up, like for leaving stuff up to question. So like, oh, you know, Junpei and Akane, like, what are you, like, what's the history there? And then it stops because like that's a big part of the game. You know, same thing with Sigma and Phi. You know.
Yeah, and I guess it struck me as like I'm not saying like obviously it should just like spill all its cards, But it seemed like it wasn't so much like didn't come across as like, oh, this character's being evasive, so, or like, you know, hiding something, so much as it is like what you said is a non-answer.
Yeah, specifically, what you're referring to is like a bit of kind of exposition almost, where you're learning about a bunch of these characters, with the exception of one of the teams. You're pretty much familiar with most of the people who are here. A lot of them are returning characters. That isn't a spoiler. You can see the characters' names and appearances and stuff like that. And so, like, that is a way for you to get, like, a little bit of a hint that maybe some of these people are connected in different ways. But, like, for a lot of them, the answers to those questions are stuff that somebody who's played a lot of this already knows.
Do they explain that at some point?
Oh, yeah. Like they explore all of it, and, you know, at length. But it's like, hey, if you're here and you know this, like, Yahtzee. If you're not, like, this is part of the mystery.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I mean, they're just, yeah. Okay.
I couldn't see playing this game without at least having played VLR. I really couldn't.
Is that out on, Mac and PC?
No, there's hints that they may port it, but like right now it is 3DS and Vita only.
So okay. I thought I saw that there was like a literal visual novel version of 999.
Yeah, it's only iOS and it doesn't have the escape room.
Yeah. Don't start me on that, Dennis. I flipped a table about that, like, whenever I played that. Was that last year? I don't know.
Yeah, sometime last year. Yeah. I will say this, there are kind of some like bummer puzzles in this, but there is one of the best puzzles I've ever played in one of these kind of games.
High praise.
Yeah, it's really good. One of the puzzles specifically, it's the for anybody who's playing along, the transporter room. But I don't even want to talk about what's so great about it.
Hopefully this involves Statham.
Oh yeah, he makes an appearance. They blew all the budget on him.
Seems legit.
Yeah, no, it's great. Like, so I see myself finishing up here soon. Like, it's a wonderful, like, I don't feel like leaving the couch for a while kind of thing. Like, it's highly engaging, and like, so far of the games that I've played this year, you know, that aren't Dark Souls 3, that's not in the running. Like, this is my favorite thing that I've played so far.
Wow. Yeah. Very cool.
At least so far. Like, it could take a wet fart, and people who know the way it ends, like, oh, you didn't understand, it was the Kool-Aid man all along. Like, then, you know, forgive me for that. But in this moment where this game is three quarters of the way done, it feels like, it's doing a really, really good job at what it's setting out to do.
Good. Yeah, cool. You're enjoying it.
Zero Time Dilemma. Cool. You guys want to button it up?
Buttons.
Let us button.
Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of The Level 157. We're super happy you came. Let's see here. What can people do? Well, there's usual stuff. Patreon and Facebook. You can catch all of that at duckfeed.tv. You know, all the links and such. Talk about the show, tweet about us, follow us on Twitter. We give those names at the end. We all stream, like, we've all talked about streaming so far. So I want to share our Twitch usernames here, starting with you, Jala.
I'm Jala-chan everywhere.
Oh, so that was easy. Dennis, what do you stream under?
I am GreenLaser73.
David, what do you stream under?
I don't think I have anything yet, so that's going to have to be it.
Okie dokie. Yeah, and I'm Duckfeed TV. I'm in the middle of a Deadly Premonition stream, and that is a good time.
I know. I've been catching some of that.
Yeah, it's a fun game. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So thanks everybody. I really appreciate it. So I'm Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I'm Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter.
I'm David Mysmith at Mysmith777 on Twitter.
It's Jala-chan in all the places except when I'm Neon Sky Studio.
Fantastic. And stick around for some titles. Okay, so I only have one. I want to hear other people's.
I got so many titles. Oh, okay. My God. Okay, so The Bend of the World. Consider Rickshaw. Grove of Facepalm Trees. The Lizard Was My Landlord. A Cold-Blooded Death. And Over the Coals.
I type slow tonight, landlord. Okay, that's a bunch. No, I had I didn't have a grove of a grove of face palm tree. I just had face palm tree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had face palm tree as well.
Yeah.
So, of those, I didn't have any. I was a slacker. Mm-hmm. I kind of like Consider Rickshaw.
Consider Rickshaw. Okay. I forgot about that one. Dennis, what you got?
The only one I have in addition to Face Palm Trees is Nostalgia for the Red Scare.
Yeah.
That one's actually pretty good, especially considering like Independence Day stuff.
Yeah.
I like Face Palm Tree is mine. I think Consider Rickshaw is the runner up. I feel bad doing a Ben title when Ben isn't here.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
I agree.
Yeah.
Okay. Any objections? No, I like Face Palm Tree as well. That was the top of my list.
Cool.
Cool.
There we are.
Although cool. I do have to say, Nostalgia for the Red Scare would be an amazing band name.
You're correct. Cool.
Good stuff.
Well, I'm going to go because I need to get some laundry out and then go to bed.
I need some sleep.
Yeah.
Good night, y'all.
Take care, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. Peace. Bye.